Chapter 33. Like everything about the investigation, Leonard Manitou's story leaves me with more questions than answers. I wake up the next morning no closer to resolving any of yesterday's questions. What was Travis messing with, and why did he think the little people were so mad at him? Did he really see something, or was he hallucinating? Do any other elders have stories about little people or mushrooms that I could try to learn? Is it possible to solve one riddle without tumbling down more rabbit holes? I head to the ferry with my scattered thoughts. Leonard Manitou was nearly the same age as the twins. The little people took him through a stone? Fearless Macy launching off the end of a water slide. Knowing her, she'd strike an action pose, fist raised in the air. Buttercup from the Powerpuff Girls cartoon I watch with the twins. Auntie's words still sting. How can she think I'm acting foolish over a guy? Ditching her and the twins for the new guy in town? Telling me that TJ Keywaden claims he's no good. It's none of her business, and it's definitely not his. If TJ wants to look for bad guys, I've got a mirror he can eyeball. Crossing the river, I make an offering from a new pouch of Sema. I give thanks for Leonard Manitou's story before asking for help. I really need a win today, I say aloud. I check the time. Last period at Suhai. The guys will be headed to Chi Mukwa for soups practice. Now's the perfect time to ask Levi about the joint bank account and hopefully clear everything up. The quiet lobby at Chi Mukwa feels unnatural. It's the calm before the convergence of hockey practice, city volleyball league, drop-in basketball, dance classes, after-school programs, moms pushing strollers around the indoor walking track, and satellite courses for the tribal college. There is a soups fundraising bulletin board next to the concession window. Today's newspaper takes up most of the space, with small photos of Robin tacked around the front page. The headline announces Sioux Superiors versus Blue Devils All-Stars on Friday. There is no mention of Robin. Team Captain Levi is in the main photo, along with both coaches, Call Me Grant, Dana, and other big cheeses who've donated. I scan the article and finally spot Robin's name in the fourth paragraph. She is already an afterthought. I distance myself from the bulletin board, walking backward until I am in the hallway leading to the volleyball courts. The lobby doors open. Guys laugh, mostly familiar voices, boasts about girls they're snagging or hoping to snag soon. Sighing, I decide to remain hidden. I don't feel like joining hockey world just yet. "Who's that pretty Indian girl with nice tits?" asks a voice I don't recognize. "Macy Maneater," Mike says. They laugh. "Wait up," Levi calls out. Footsteps approach as he catches up with them. The unfamiliar voice asks, "Well, who's the incredible bulk that Johnson's boning? She's got a nice ass." My hands ball into fists. "Are you fucking kidding me?" Levi shouts a second before there is the crunch of a fist connecting with bone. "Don't you ever talk about her like that. She's worth 10 of you." "Dude, that's his sister," Mike tells the clueless guy. I peek around the corner, torn between being grateful to Levi and being upset that he resorted to violence. Stormy and Mike pull my brother away from a guy catching blood in a hand cupped under his nose. "You so much as look at her and I will end hockey for you," Levi seethes while flexing his fingers to assess any damage. I react as if jolted by an electric shock. I've never seen my brother so enraged. His voice and coiled stance are unrecognizable. Mike notices me and quickly nudges Levi. "Hey, Donis," Mike says with exaggerated friendliness. "Go on ahead," Levi tells him. "Not you." He gets in the bleeding guy's face. "You apologize to her." His teammate makes the briefest eye contact with me, enough for me to see his shame and fear. "I'm sorry," he says, voice muffled by his hand. Levi watches the guy hurry away while I observe my brother. I don't like the glint in his eyes. because it isn't from anger, but rather satisfaction. It's gone from his face by the time he wraps me in a massive hug. Did you see me go all goon on him? Levi lightens his tone, jostling me before he lets go. Dad would be proud of me, defending your honor, hey? Levi, you were beyond goon. It was disturbing, to be honest, I admit. Hey, nobody disrespects my sister. But guys say stuff about girls all the time. You talk about girls like that. My shock finally crystallizes into thoughts. If you're that provoked when the comments are about me, maybe you should think about the comments you and your friends make about any girl. Dumbfounded, Levi stares at me. It takes a half a minute before my brother has a light bulb on moment. I never thought about it like that, he says. When Levi hugs me again, I'm filled with hope. He's not a violent goon. He's my brother. Not perfect, but capable of growth. I hug him back, even more tightly. Then, for some reason, we both laugh like little kids sharing a private joke, and Levi playfully shoves me away. What brings you here anyway? He asks. Waiting for lover boy? As if on cue, Jamie enters the lobby. His smile reaches his eyes. In one fluid motion, he grabs my waist, twirls me once, and continues on his way. Holy wah, that was hot. Smooth moves, my brother calls out as Jamie heads to the locker room. Then Levi looks at me expectantly, waiting for me to answer his question. What did he ask me? For a second, I can't think of anything except imagining Jamie and me on the Shagla dance floor, and today's appointment at Mrs. Edwards' store, which I've been dreading. I haven't been there since it was Grand Mary's boutique. It might not be so bad. A fitting for a dress when I have no idea what it looks like, or how much it will cost. Money. Bank. Eureka! I laugh. I called the bank across the river to make sure there was enough money to cover dinner. Why are you keeping so much in the joint account? Levi looks momentarily confused before he has his own eureka moment. Oh, that, he laughs too. I'm buying land near Searchmont. Sweet investment, you know? Figured it'd be easier using our Canadian account. Holy tycoon, I say, giddy with relief. I got my answer, and that's that. Why Ontario? Coach Bobby is always looking for property here. None of Coach Bobby's businesses ever take off in a big way, Levi says. He tilts his head. Can I ask you something and you promise not to get pissed? Okay, I say hesitantly. Grand Mary's not, like, getting better, right? I stare at my shoes. If she passes away, will you transfer to U of M? Or stick around now that you got something going with Jamie? It feels good to show genuine surprise. I don't know. I had a plan for my life, but everything is different now. Maybe you need new plans, Levi says. Remember, Coach Bobby always says, failure to plan means planning to fail. I smile. How come you've spent half the time I did with Coach, but you quote Bobby LaFleur's wise words more than anybody? He shrugs and flashes his perfect smile. What would you think about investing with me? Levi asks, suddenly boyish in his earnestness. A business opportunity where we could work together. Your genius brain plus mine? We'd be unstoppable. Grand Mary always said not to mix business with family and friends, I say. He raises an eyebrow. Why not? Because they'll think it's a democracy, but a successful business needs one leader who can make tough decisions and be an asshole. Grand Mary said asshole? I translated it for you, I say. We laugh. Seriously, though, he says. It might be good advice for everybody else, but we're special, hey? We look out for each other and keep it real. Levi's right. When the shit goes down, we've got each other's back. Speaking of failing to plan, what are you going to do for your B-Day? He asks. I mimic his exaggerated shrug from earlier. Play hockey for Robin, go to Shagala the day after with Jamie. Mike's parents are doing their usual Shagala after party in the Ogima suite. We could throw our own all-nighter at his house. Is there anything special you want? It comes to me immediately. Something I want. No, something I need. Dad's scarf. You always say it has to be somewhere in your house. Can you look for it? My 8th birthday was the first one without Dad. Levi tried cheering me up, but nothing helped. Until one day, my brother gave me a photo of us with Dad. Levi and I were wrestling him tag team style. I had just leaped off Grandpa Ted's recliner onto Dad's back. Levi was supposed to tag out, but he kept attacking from the front. The camera captured Dad mid-laugh. I'd been so afraid of forgetting things about him until I looked at the photo. That's what Levi's gift was on my 8th birthday. Dad's deep, rumbling laughter. He'd laugh like that, pulling us around the rink with his extra-long scarf. Although I know now that it must have been so painful for him to skate on mangled legs. Dad was happy to be with us on the ice. Levi hugs me. For you? Absolutely. I show up early for my dress fitting. My, my, Mrs. Edwards says. I half expected you to be a no-show and thought I'd need to send a search party for you. I follow her to what used to be Grandpa Lorenzo's office overlooking Ashman Street. The windows are now draped in sheer curtains that puddle on the floor. Her desk is a fancy glass dining table in front of a huge, ornately framed bulletin board covered in fabric swatches. On the opposite exposed brick wall, she's mounted a trio of matching oversized mirrors. The outer two are hinged to create a dressing room area complete with a small raised platform. Oh, Mrs. Edwards, it's beautiful, I say in genuine awe. That's right. You and Grace haven't seen it since we renovated. I'm expanding into bridal gowns, even trying my own designs. She pauses before asking, Will your mother be okay with the new look? Mom doesn't do well with change, I say in the understatement of the year. But it doesn't matter, because this is amazing. Grand Mary would have loved it. Mrs. Edwards gets a little misty-eyed before collecting herself and waving in the tailor she inherited from Grand Mary. The tailor displays a red gown with a flourish. I force a smile because they're watching me. Dresses have never been my thing. My first surprise is that I have to step into, rather than dive into, the garment because it's pants. Silky wide-leg pants with a fluttery transparent overlay. When I step onto the platform, the elegant pants flow like a skirt. There is a deep pocket along each side seam. Bra off, the tailor says. Really? I glance around. But what about my top? You're wearing it. I stand topless on the platform and twist around to stare at multiple angles of myself in the red pants, before noticing a weird train attached to the back of my waist. With a grin, the tailor bends to lift one panel of the train and drapes it over my shoulder. She does the same with the other before pinning the ends of the red silk into my waist. The sleeveless top exposes skin to just above my belly button. Holy, I say. Mrs. Edwards laughs. Is that good or bad? I don't know. It's all out there. Listen. You're the only person who can carry this off, she says, appraising me in the mirrors. Anyone with cleavage would be too exposed. Oh, don't look at me like that. We'll fix you up with some double-sided fabric tape so there are no wardrobe malfunctions. No one can forget seeing Janet Jackson's boob during the halftime show at this year's Super Bowl. Now, do you have hot rollers? No. Mrs. Edwards tisk-tisks. Stop by tonight and you can borrow mine. You'll want to blow dry your hair, spritz it with setting spray, and roll small sections until your head is a helmet of rollers. When you take the rollers out, you pull up the front half into a high ponytail and wrap your mother's strand of pearls around it and pin into place. Not the real pearls, but the good fake ones. And ask Grace for your grandmother's ruby and pearl drop earrings. I only have pierced ears because Lily made me do it. She said I could either get it done at the mall across the river, or she'd make me drink grappa until I passed out and do it herself. Mrs. Edwards scrunches her nose. I'm not going to get makeup on you, am I? I shake my head, already overwhelmed by her hair tutorial. Indulge me with some red lipstick for your grandmother. I sigh and nod. As I pay for the dress and the golden tube of red lipstick that Mrs. Edwards insisted was perfect for me, my BlackBerry vibrates. Auntie, come over tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Important. I mull a response, still hurt that she would listen to TJ over me. But it doesn't feel right when Auntie and I aren't on the same page. When my mother returned to the Sioux with baby me, it was Auntie who told her about my dad and Dana and Levi Jr. It was Auntie who brought me to Sugar Island to spend time with my dad and Firekeeper grandparents. She was the one who told us the horrible news when my dad died. I've always been a Firekeeper. Auntie made it more than a name. She made me family. Me. Okay, 8. Mrs. Edwards tries opening the top drawer of the antique dresser that serves as a checkout counter. It's where the smallest paper shopping bags are kept. Donis, this piece is gorgeous, but each drawer has a mind of its own. Either they stick when it's damp out, or the drawer guide won't stay in place. Grand Mary had me behind that counter for so many hours. I know every inch of it. I laugh. I know. I always searched for a hidden treasure. I was convinced I'd find a secret drawer in the dresser, but I never did. So many lovely childhood memories here, Mrs. Edwards says with a smile. The alterations will get done tonight or tomorrow morning. Stop by any time tomorrow after lunch, she says. You know we'll be open late tomorrow and Friday, but it's only going to get more chaotic. I practically float all the way to the Jeep. I've never been this excited about going to Shagala. The way Jamie led me in that one spin at Chimakwa. Oh, Lily, I wish you were here. How can I be so happy and still so sad? Grand Mary, I should stop by Evercare with Jamie on the way to Shagala. Maybe she will have a light bulb on moment. She won't approve of the low-cut top, though. I wish Dad could see me. Uncle David, too. My uncle would have helped Mom get over how much skin I'll be showing on Saturday. He always helped her through all the secrets and scandals. Secrets. My heart skips a beat. It was Uncle David's desk at school that had the secret drawer.